Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 218. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
That's me.
And we're kicking off October with a full horror movie episode here.
Yeah.
Well, 2 years ago we did, for Halloween, we did all the Friday the 13th movies. Last year we did all the Halloween movies. So I think it's only fair that this year we do the other big, these are the three big franchises of our youth. We're going to do Nightmare on Elm Street this year.
Yep.
In the 80s, it was Freddy, Jason, and Michael. And I guess we saved in what is, for me, my least favorite for last.
Okay.
I don't know. I liked the series growing up, but it's never been close to my favorite. Halloween and then Friday the 13th have always kind of battled for my favorite spot, and then this is always the third. How about for you?
I probably put Friday the 13th below it. I think I've around more if we were just going based on previously. I mean, Halloween's always been at the top, and then I think I went Nightmare for a while, and then Friday the 13th, and now I don't really know.
I mean, we'll see.
We'll see how this all shakes out.
Yeah, I don't see it changing for me. Despite the fact, and we're gonna get into it in a second, that I think the first Nightmare on Elm Street is really kind of above and beyond what other slasher films were doing at the time. But
yeah,
it's just, as a series, I just I don't know. I've always liked it the least for whatever reason, but there are certainly high points in the series. But let's get into it. Let's start with Nightmare on Elm Street, which was written and directed by Wes Craven, came out November 9th, 1984, which is funny. You'd think they would try to get it out before Halloween. Budget of $1.8 million, and it said it did a box office of $25 million, which might not sound like much, but I guess with that budget.
And at that time of... it was 1984.
Yeah.
So pretty good.
This first film was it wasn't Wes Craven's first film, but it kind of put him on the map. This is his idea. And I think he got it from reading these articles about people that were dying in their sleep from nightmares or some shit. And he came up with this idea of, a slasher who stalks you in your dreams. And he built the Freddy character out of that, who is basically a janitor or something, or I don't know.
I'm not really sure. He works
in a boiler room.
Yeah. I don't know.
He was a child killer. I think it's kind of implied that he was also probably a child molester or something like that.
Yes. I think there's actually some history there where it's I think he is, that may have been originally in the script and they took it out.
Yeah. And I think we'll see in the remake, they make it more explicit, but, I don't think despite the fact that it's taken out, your brain kind of fills in the rest in a way. You're all right, well, he was probably, fucking with these kids or something.
For sure.
I think it works. I think it works just fine how they did it here in the original. It's a group of kids. The lead is Heather Langenkamp, who she plays Nancy. First film from Johnny Depp here, I think, as her kind of love interest.
Yeah.
And they all start having nightmares about this guy with knives for fingers. People start dying basically in their dreams. This thing's killing them in their dreams. To get ahead on the plot here anyways, you eventually find out that their parents had killed this guy back in the day, who was a child murderer, and now he's going after their kids in their dreams. That's a basic concept for this. And I think that this first movie, I mean, I'll let you give some thoughts on it, though. I think this first one, I think it's like a really original idea for a slasher movie. And I think that, you know, this first movie is pretty actually creepy and has some good, like, really kind of scary moments and creepy kills. And I think Freddy's pretty menacing in this. It's all around just like, the thing I keep coming back to is this is like just like a really original kind of slasher film when you think of like the stuff that was out at the time, like what the genre was before this. Like this
it's way more creative too.
Like yeah,
the
yeah.
And we'll get in as we kind of explore this a little more, we'll get into it. But the dream sequences they're meshed really well. You never know what is the real world versus what is the dream world, because you're not supposed to, like, you're supposed to be confused, just like the, you know, Nancy and Glenn and the rest of them are. It's supposed to kind of give you this sense of surreal confusion, and it does a great job of it, like where it's mixing back and forth and you're never really sure what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, it opens them up to be even more creative with the kills and stuff. It's not just some guy with like an axe chasing some kids in the woods or whatever. It's, you know, it's a dream. Anything could happen. I think, you know, they have a limited budget to work with here. You know, so I think that like later in the series you go more wild with the dream shit, but.
I think, and we'll see how it pans out for both of us as we explore, but I think that the fact that they were a little more constrained here made them be way more creative in how they handled it. So it seems like that just seems weird. It seems creepy.
Yeah.
But like, it's not like, oh, that's outlandish. That's like nonsense. Like it plays with your expectations a bit. Because they're trying to be so creative, and they do some wonderful things with it that you kind of fill in the blanks in your head.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, the dream sequences here are more grounded in like reality, almost like they're like an off-kilter version of reality, as opposed to like, you know, they have tons of money to blow building sets and stuff. Here's just like they're still kind of in their neighborhood, and then this guy pops out. I do think that, like, the first big kill in A Nightmare on Elm Street is Tina. And I think that's probably the best, like, dream sequence in the whole series, probably. I mean, again, I have to see these all again. It's been a while since I've seen some of them. But that first one I've always found really scary. You know, he's, like, chasing her through an alley, and he, like, his arms stretch out all like super long. So he's like scratching awesome. Both sides of the alley. You know, and it's like kind of like minimal dialogue from him. He'll just be like, "This is God." Or he's like, "Hey, watch this." And he like holds up his hand and he slices off his thumb and like green blood comes out.
But it does a good job of building the tension up to like, you know, when Tina's actually killed. Like, cause it's not just, you know, Tina being chased through the alley and, you know, trying to run back to the house. Like, there's also like Nancy asleep in the bed, and then there's like the kind of like, it's like a rubberized ceiling where Freddy's pushing through.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Like, that's a really like, cool effect.
Yeah.
You know, completely practical. It's just like, like it's like a little sheet or something that he's pushing down. It's supposed to be her ceiling, and it looks great to this day. I think, like, kind of speaking to what you were saying there, though, like another thing about this is I think the score is really, really good in this one, and they'll use, like, throughout the series, I'm pretty sure they use like the main theme a lot. The like. Like, but there's like other parts of the score here that are really good, and they like don't use. I don't think they continue using, and they add like a lot to the atmosphere here. Like when the dream sequence get really intense, it's like this frantic, like fucking music that starts playing that I think really adds a lot to it. That first stream then also like spills into the real world where was her boyfriend Rod or whatever, like wakes up and sees her like thrashing around in bed. You see Freddy under the covers, like fucking with her, but then like in the real world, and the whole like, is this a dream or is it a real world? We'll get into more for sure. I think it gets confusing, especially near the end of this, but in the real world, you see Tina like dragged up onto the ceiling and just like kind of ripped open, and she falls.
Get her fucking blood everywhere. It's all over everything. She has multiple cuts all over her. She's screaming the entire time. Rod's screaming. It's actually like, to me, like Rod screaming is like the worst part of like that whole thing. Is because his screaming is just, it's awful. It's like acting is terrible. It's like really like he's gonna scream like a, I don't know, like I don't, he just like whining almost like I granted, we've never been in a situation. I just hated that part of it. It's like, shut up, dude. Like, let her scream. It's fine. Her scream's good. Yours is terrible.
I like Rod as a character, though. Like, what little we get of him before he's, like, fucking axed in this. But, like, just, like, the idea of, like, oh, it's, like, this total asshole, but he's actually kind of does have a heart, and like, but no one, like, everyone just assumes that he fucking like killed her. Yeah. And I was like, I did, like, Nancy believes him, but like, I think at one point, like, Johnny Depp even says to Nancy, like, yeah, he obviously did it. Like,
he was the, like, only one in there.
Boyfriend. I mean, I get that they fought a lot and stuff, but you know, everything seemed to be going well. You know, so it's just funny that everyone's just like, yeah, he did it. I also like the whole part with Rod in the police station. Her dreaming about Rod in the police station, I think, is, you know, creepy, and it's got a lot of atmosphere. But I think that's like a good early example of the movie kind of like not knowing what the rules are, though, in a way, because it's like the idea is supposed to be that he's this thing that's in your dreams, and but the dreams are so intense they're basically real, and he could kill you in your dreams, right? But like, here, like, you see him basically moving Rod's like bed sheet in the real world and turning it into a noose and hanging Rod with it. It's just like, okay, what are the rules here? I thought he's the thing in your dreams. He's like basically doing stuff in the real world here too.
So,
like,
so I think that's the first indication that this entire movie, and I think we need to kind of separate it from the rest of the series, because the rest of the series plays by different rules and sets different expectations, I think.
Yeah.
But this one, I know based on, like, you know, having seen you know, footage from the creators and from like Robert Englund talking about it, like Wes Craven's idea here was that the entire thing was a dream. Like, even reality was a dream.
Interesting.
So like all the, so that part, you know, where we'll get into it, where Freddy comes into the real world, that is also part of a dream. So her seeing that and it actually happening is all part of like these interconnected dreams that, that don't play well once you move past this film.
Yeah. And it's so funny to me though, because like, oh, I've seen this a billion times, and when I was a kid, I like never even occurred to me like that the whole thing was a dream. Even this time, like, I was still like, wait, what? And it was like weird, because I remember when I was a kid, like, one of my favorite parts, like, this was my favorite one as a kid, and one of my favorite parts was like, she, you know, like, she has like this handbook on booby traps and shit. She basically, it's like this whole Home Alone part,
yeah,
end, you know, and it's like, that part was the part I, like, when I was a kid, I thought was so cool, because, like, oh, you know, the idea being is if you could pull this thing into the real world, then he would just be like a man again. You could
defeat him.
Right. Yeah, you could just kill him, and she kind of, like, you know, does have him chase her all around the house, and she fucks him up with her weird-ass booby traps and shit. Like, she sets off, like, explosions in her house and shit. It's like, dude, you're gonna burn your fucking mom's house to the ground. Also, there's some funny shit with the mom we should touch on too, but yeah, let's just like talk about the ending while I stumbled into it there though. Like, so yeah, like she does all this shit and she like lures him into the basement, sets him on fire, and he like runs up out of the basement and shit. And it's like, I don't know, like for me, like I always like wanted to take it as like that's what happened. She pulled him to the real world and she did all this shit. And it's like I always like kind of forgot what happened after that. Like the way I remembered it in my head as a kid is she pulls him out and she kills him in the real world. And like I think that would have been a cooler. I mean, maybe it's just like I have a weird bias because of how I remember the movie and how I wanted it to be. But like I just think that's like a cooler thing than this was all a dream. Like I don't know.
Well, I think knowing that they didn't then build off of Nancy, she basically becomes like, you know, she's gonna feature in two more films in this series. She kind of becomes the de facto like start of the lore here. And I think if this was just by itself, I think the dream sequence works. But we're also tainted by the fact that we know there's like five more films after this.
And it's like, so then like, did the sequels you think kind of build off the idea more that like, yeah, you could pull him into the real world and then he's just like fucking not as powerful or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
I think they rewrote the rules after one. Right. And like when we talk about two, which is a completely different thing,
it's its own thing apart from all of them in a way.
Like it's interesting to note, like this was not conceived and most films aren't, this was not conceived as like the start of a franchise. Right. They didn't even realize like what they had on their hands when they put it out there. And then two came around and like, oh fuck, they didn't know what part is what people wanted out of it. Like they were just confused.
I think in general, like you could put this across, you could apply this to any probably franchise back then. There was like less care taken too, like where it was just like, we're just going to make a sequel and like we'll rewrite the rules. We'll figure out some way for them to come back and fuck whatever the next one is. Like movies nowadays are often like thought of as a franchise. And so,
yeah, they're conceived that way. And this was very much not, it was just, hey, you know, shit, we hit the jackpot. Let's make another one. You see that with Friday the 13th too, or Halloween, like,
they're flying by the seat of their pants. I mean, Halloween, at one point, they were just going to do different stories every year. Yeah. I do think that there was an inkling that they might have something here, though, because I think, let's go over the end a little bit more, but like, yeah, like the very ending, like the, you know, it's like after everything has happened and she's like going out to a car with her friends that are still now alive and her mom's like saying bye to her and that she quit drinking and stuff. Like, I think that, if I remember correctly, was like forced by the producer, Robert Shea. So maybe, because it does feel like one of those, you know, maybe next time something's happening, Freddy's still out there. Like, you know, we can have a
like,
sequel to
leave
this.
It open. Like look what they did with Michael and with Jason. Like,
yeah.
There's possibility if this does well enough, we can come back to it. Yeah,
and then like Freddy comes, he like smashes through the window and pulls like her dummy body through the fucking.
It's a great scene. It's so dumb. Like I hate that scene in general, but that piece is hysterical when he grabs her mom and just drags her through. Like it is so noticeably a mannequin or like a dummy or something.
But that's your final shot. Amazing, of the film, basically. Yeah, and I'm happy to hear you agree with me. Like, I don't like that ending scene. I think it sucks. I think it, like, this movie has so much atmosphere and dread and stuff, and then it's just, like, this goofy fucking ending on there.
It's a shame, because that's the direction they took the rest of the series.
Yeah, like, kind of, yeah.
Like, because, I don't know, like, yes, Freddy out of, you know, the big three, he's the one with the personality. He's the one that talks. Like, he... In this one, he's menacing. He's like, he toys with his victims and not with like a, not in the way of like, you know, some of these torture movies where they're toying with them by like cutting them or something. Like he's just psychologically fucking with them all the time.
He has a little bit of like, you know, there's a little bit of humor to him in this one, but he's still like very kind of scary and off-putting. Like, you know, there's like the part where she picks up the phone, he kisses her through the phone, and she doesn't say like, "I'm your boyfriend now" or something like that.
Yeah.
But like they lean into that way more, especially in like the later sequels. Like by the time the late 80s, you know, like when we're getting to 4 and 5.
He almost becomes like a fucking stand-up comedian at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And here he's not really like... Yeah, in fact, like he speaks in this, but it's like he just says like one or two things that like, creep them out while he's fucking with them. Backing up a little bit from like the very ending, though, we should go over like how she kills him for real, though. So she like does all that, and then she like runs upstairs, and she's like, I remember this part. She's like busts out a window, and she's like screaming at this cop across the street because they're cleaning up Glenn, which is like another. That's another death where it's like impossible in the real world or whatever, right. But it somehow happens. She's like screaming at this cop, like, oh my god. And like this cop was sitting out there because he's supposed to watch to see if anything happens to her. And he's just like, the way he reacts is just so slow. He's like, huh, I guess I should go get her dad or whatever. It's just like, dude,
the house is fucking burning down.
I know, I know. Like, did you notice that? He's just like, he's just like, I guess I should do something. I'm like, yeah, dude, she's screaming. Like, she just broke out a window. Like you said, the house is on fire and shit.
Yeah, it's like, hey, regardless of if she, you believe she's crazy or not, that's where you go get her dad because he asked you to go get him. And then he can deal with it. Like, hey, you deal with it, man. Your daughter's nuts. Yeah. Go get her.
You had one job. I mean, he does it, but he's just so like,
lackadaisical about it. Yeah, like,
maybe I should do something here. Yeah, she runs upstairs, and I think her dad gets in there by this point, too, or whatever, and she, like, her mom's on the bed, and, like, Freddy is, like, on top of her mom, and then her mom, like, changes into, like, this, I don't know, like, a fucking haunted mansion animatronic.
So ridiculous, yes.
Just, like, this ghostly lady, like, this ghostly, like, kind of, like, rotted corpse thing, and like that's wearing like a wedding
nightgown, white nightgown,
and she just like sinks into the bed like had turned into like I don't know, like basically mist or whatever, and she just like disappears into the mist, and that's where it's like then all pretense of like the way I had remembered it in my head and the way I wanted it to go, like that she had pulled him in the real world kind of goes away, because like there's no way like that shit could happen in the real world, you know? It just doesn't make sense.
Like I have that written down here. Like it's like, what the fuck is with the burned corpse lady being stuck into the bed?
It's just very weird. Like it's cool looking and shit. But yeah, and then like Freddy, you know, confronts Nancy again, and I kinda dig this. Like I kinda dig the way she kinda beats him here though, is where she's just like, you feed off our fear and you know, if we don't give you that, you don't have any power. And you know, she basically tells him, this is all just a dream. And she, like, turns her back on him and, like, that robs him. Like, he goes to attack her and he just kind of, like, disappears, you know?
Yeah.
That would have been an okay ending. And then we would still have to have this discussion of, like, I guess it was all a dream. And I guess it was. But then they had to just tack on that. I think this movie would be a better movie without that final scene. I don't know what
you'd put at the end. If you left that up, like even if you don't have that weird, like, because one, it destroys the feel of the movie at that point. There's at those closing scenes where you know the mom gets sucked into the bed. It's this like dark, it's like this dark tone visually. Like it's a dark scene. Yeah. Like it's not bright. And then you know she like. He shuts the door and then the scene cuts to going forward and all of a sudden it's super bright out except like foggy. So it's like, you seem like you're in a haze and, but everything's bright. It's like, this just doesn't feel right. Like it feels tacked on, which evidently it was.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. I think they could have ended it with like, you know, Freddy taking the mom down. And then, like, you do something else, like, where you if you want to tease a sequel or something, like, you show the glove, like, hiding, or, like, being somewhere else or something like that. You don't need to do it this way.
You could have her like she's back in school and she falls asleep and there's one more dream or something, and then like
right.
she realizes she's in a dream, then Freddy's there and whatever, just end it like that. I don't know. Like just something just less goofy. I get what they're going for with it, but you could have just done it better somehow.
And that doesn't stop with the next film either. Like
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that a minute ago. I think the final scene of part two is really stupid too.
But before we get there, though, like it is, you mentioned the soundtrack. I have a note here. It's like it's like really simple. Has like these long notes and like repeating beats, mm-hmm. but it works to be like really creepy.
Yeah, like the slow parts. It's kind of like do. I'm terrible right. at this, but like. Yeah, But yeah, and then like I was saying, like in the intense parts, it would be like, I think the soundtrack is like the score is like really good in this one. Anyway, yeah, sorry to interrupt.
No, it is really good. I think we talked about the creativeness. Like, I think the scene before Glenn dies, which is where like she kind of like enables Glenn to be like, hey, you gotta, you know, stay awake with me or whatever, which I think is funny. Like they keep doing that too. It's like, watch me, wake me up. Like if you see something going on, yeah, and they always fall asleep. And it's, but like the staircase turning into like oatmeal or whatever, like as she's running up the steps, and then
that's cool. But you could see like where they put the steps for her. Like you could see where the oatmeal is before she steps in it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like it has this cool effect as she's running up the steps, and like then using Tina's voice and body, like just to kind of taunt Nancy like out of it, and then the whole like she looks in the mirror and he jumps through the mirror, like the whole scene is great, and the pillow and the feathers like flying around, and then using that to tie to the real world.
I'm sorry. So what?
That using those like the pillow and the feathers that tie back to like the real world.
Oh yeah,
or her real world.
There's even like, you know, like the part where they take her to like the clinic or whatever. Like just the conversation that the mom and the scientists are having. Like it's kind of goofy in a way, but it's like just like a mood and an atmosphere to it, you know. And that one is really cool because she wakes up from that one and she like looks under the covers and she's got his hat. And that's like introduces the concept of like, oh, you could grab something and pull it through, which is really cool, like idea. But I was gonna say, when I was a kid, the parts with Tina always freaked me out. Where, like you said, she'd be like Freddy would be using Tina's corpse like to taunt her. Like I remember, like just seeing the person in a body bag freaked me out. But then also like there's a part where she like opens her mouth and like a fucking giant bug comes crawling out of it. And then there's like a shot of her feet and there's just like writhing pile of like muddy snakes and shit. Like fucking disgusting. Like all that shit I think is really good. Like, I don't know. I guess to like try to get to an overall like thing of what I think of this movie, it's like, it's like I keep going back to like original and creative.
He's terrifying. Yeah. Like Freddy is absolutely terrifying here. Like the bathtub scene.
With that's Nancy. A really good one. That's like, a perfect one. Remember that one when you see the remake.
Yeah, it's a straight up sexual assault though. Like they like have a scene of like between like the claw comes up, like the glove comes up between her fucking legs.
Really cool like composition of that shot too. Like you're like staring at her from one end of the bathtub and you start to see his hand come out like between her legs. And he, like doesn't she like he like pulls her down into the tub and then you see it's like this giant take of water. She's it's like fucking crazy.
And then one other thing I had here was that the boiler room is just like this ultimate villain lair. Like it is.
Yeah.
It is. It's like, because it's real. Like it's something that we can go visit. We can go to a boiler room. We can go to a basement that has like machinery like this. And that's what makes it scary, is that it has a tie to reality. It's not this, you know, nonsense where, oh, like, you know, Leatherface has a closet full where he's like skinning people. Like, that seems absurd to me, but like this is a place I might visit, right? Like I might go into a basement where it's dark and who the fuck knows what's around that corner? Maybe there is a fucking lunatic with knives for fingers. Like,
and they did a lot of stuff too, like in though, and like, you know, like whenever you're in the boiler room and shit, like Freddy will always be like running his fingers along the fucking steel all over it, and you're just like, or there's like a fucking sheep running around in it. Like, what the fuck's going on here? Yeah, but I just think that you have to remember, like, one, Halloween and Friday the 13th were also light years above most others. Like, most other slasher films at the time were, like, really, really cheap looking, these really kind of low-rent whodunits, basically. Yeah. And this was just, like, a totally original idea. Like, just in terms of, like, you have that concept alone, which is, like, high concept for the genre. And just, like, this thing just has more filmmaking talent behind it. It has, you know, it has, like, characters. It has a story. There's a backstory, like, an interesting backstory that you find out about. Like, I do think, like, that's my thing. Is like, I have problems with the movie. Like, there's things I don't love, like the ending. And there's weird, like, if you take certain things at face value, which is, it's hard not to when the series goes forward and kind of adopts the rules of this one. You know, when you after you realize that, like, the whole thing is a dream, then anything could happen, right? But, like, you know, most of the movie, it's like, well, it's presenting, like, hey, he's more powerful in the dreams, you could pull him out of the dreams and shit. But then you have, like, weird things where, like, Glenn's dreaming, he just gets sucked into his bed and shoots all this blood out. I guess it works better once you know what the ending is and you know that it was all kind of a dream. Then it's just, like, just makes everything like whatever,
right? Because you were never in the real world, like, as a viewer, you never saw reality. You don't know what's happening outside of their dream. You mentioned, like, how, you know, there's kind of a, you know, there's characters here, and Freddy himself is a character,
yeah.
And they do a good job of, you know, keeping him a mystery,
but limiting him a little bit.
Just enough, like getting just enough info here and there that makes us think, like, there's something weird about his interactions with them. Like, there's a reason that he's picking on them.
Yeah.
And then when you find out, and I have this note appears in both fucking movies. Why did Nancy's mom keep the glove?
Yeah. We'll talk about that more in part two for sure. But, yeah, it's weird. The other thing I wanted to touch on is, like, the mom, just, like, they're, you know, trying to portray her that, like, she's, like, this alcoholic, and, like, they go over the top with it at points. It's just so fucking, like, she has a bottle of booze just, like, hidden everywhere in this house somehow. Like, she'll just be talking to her in a hallway, and she'll open, like, a linen closet and pull a bottle out of the fucking closet.
Yep.
Or there's one part where, like, she's, like, lying in bed, and Nancy tells her to go to sleep, and she's like, okay, and she, like, pulls a fucking bottle of vodka out from under her pillow, and she starts drinking. I'm like, what the fuck, man? I don't know, it just strikes me as funny a little bit. Oh, I like the stuff with her mom. Like, I like the idea that her mom, you know, is kind of, like, drinking to, you know, like, push out of her mind, I guess, what they did.
Yeah, what they did to this guy.
Doesn't want to admit, like, that they, like, she realizes that, like, who's fucking with them in their dreams.
Right.
I don't know. So why don't you wrap it up with your thoughts on this? Unless there's anything else that, like, we wanted to touch on. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but
we always miss something, but yeah. No. I think, you know, we touched on it. Like, this is a super creative film. And I think for the most part, it still works. I never really liked the ending. I like it less now. And that detracts from it a little bit. But still, it just, everything about it is like this, the craft of the film is there. And it's so much better than so much,
like, of the rest
of 80s horror.
I'm sorry, you cut out for a second, I guess.
Yeah, it's so much better than, like, most 80s horror, because it's just, like, you said it earlier, it's high concept, so.
Yeah. And it feels like a real movie more than even, like some of the early Friday the 13th and stuff. Like, this is, like, again, there's story, there's character, there's a mystery that's kind of revealed. It's just, again, there's just certain things that are weird. The ending doesn't help anything. But this is classic. This launched. I think Freddy did become kind of the biggest slasher in the 80s after this, probably because he has a personality.
Yeah, you know, he's not a nameless guy behind a mask, like, you know, for whatever it is, like, you know, even though Robert Englund is very much in a mask, like, it's an emotive mask, and Freddy talks, like, he toys with his victims, and as the series gets going, he becomes more and more jokey, even breaking, like, the fourth wall with the viewer at points, so, it makes sense that he became, like, the bigger star out of the big three.
Yeah, let's rate it. Nightmare on Elm Street, the original.
I'm gonna give it 4 stars. So, I think we've said it all here. It's still a great film. There's some little issues.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm gonna give it 4. But again, you have to remember, like, most slasher films would probably be like a 2 or less. You know what I mean? Like, this thing is pretty fucking special. It makes sense why it was a huge hit and, you know, spawned this whole series. So let's get into part 2 tonight. This is our second one. Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, came out less than a year after the first one. It came out November 1st, 1985. It was directed by Jack Sholder and written by David Chaskin. And it had a budget of $3 million and did a box office of $30 million. So, had a little more money to make this one, although I wouldn't have guessed that, really.
No, not at all.
This is the odd duck. This is the redheaded stepchild of the series, because, like, every series kind of has one of these. You know, like, for, like, Halloween, there's Halloween 3 is the weird one. This is definitely the weird one in a lot of, like, and I guess in one really big respect is that the concept here is a little different, right? Like, so we have this guy in this one played by Mark Patton. I can't remember. Jesse is his name. Who, his family has moved into Nancy's house, and it's unclear, I think, of, like, how much time has passed from the first one.
Five years.
Oh, is it? They said that? 5 years?
Yeah, so they find Nancy's journal Jesse's room.
This is weird.
And she's like, oh, this was five years ago. That was before my time. Like, you guys look like
you're seniors in high school. So I guess five years after the events of the first one, this kid Jesse and his family are, like, living in Nancy's house. And he starts having dreams about Freddy. But unlike the first one, where it was just like he's trying to torment and kill, the children of people who killed him, like, that's kind of lost here. And it's just like he's just trying to take over Jesse's body somehow so that he could do stuff in the real world, like just go on a killing spree, I guess.
Yeah, he's, like, trying to find a vessel to continue his killing.
So I think that alone, like, I think that, like, especially when I was a kid, that was the thing that really separated this one from the others to me. Like, I think there's probably other things that make this feel like a little bit of, like, its own thing, but, like, that's the big one to me. I mean, also here, it is weird that, like Nancy's mentioned here, but, like, yeah, it's just, like, kind of none of the characters continuing from the first one. Yeah, it's like they're living in her house, and then they do explain, like, I think they say the mom, like, killed herself or whatever in the house.
She killed herself or she died in a fire that happened in the house, and then Nancy went crazy.
Yeah, I guess, like, Nancy's in an institution or something, they say. And I wonder, I don't know if, because I know Nancy comes back in 3, I wonder if they, like, stick to that a little bit. I think they might, because she's, like, helping the kids in part 3. But yeah, I don't know. So that alone, I think, like, those things make this one kind of strange. This is also, like, notably remembered as, like, finally, I guess, in the years since, like, remembered as, like, the gayest horror film ever made.
Yeah, it's a, I wrote this down, like, it was in the special features, I guess. They had a whole thing on it. It was seen as the gay horror film in the 80s by the gay community. And, like, the director's like, that wasn't our intention. It's like, but looking back on it, I could definitely see where they got that from. Like, yeah, they string up the gym teacher and whip them with the towel, and like, then like he goes to like the S&M bar, and
Robert Shea is like the bartender in there, I think. Yeah. I mean, there's some, like, once you know this or whatever, like, there's some, like, definitely pointed comments and stuff in it. Like, there's a part near the end where Jesse goes to his friend's house to see Calvin. His friend, like, literally says, like, you have a girl that you could be with right now, but you'd rather sleep with me. Like, that's, like, what he says to him.
It's like, if you look at it from the, like, I mean, I kind of look at it as, like, you know, a friend poking another friend, like, what's wrong with you, man? Like,
yeah,
you got, but it's like, if you look at it the other way around, it's like, Jesse is a closeted homosexual, and he's, you know, he's here kind of presenting himself to Ron, like, instead of being with his girlfriend.
Yeah, he's like way more, like, he turns to his friend more than this. I don't know if you even could call her a girlfriend in this. Like, is she supposed to be his girlfriend? Do they, like, kiss and stuff?
Oh, yeah, like, he, like, when he leaves, but before that, before he gets to Ron's house where that scene happens, he is making out with her and, like, has her, you know,
okay,
unbuttons her shirt, and, yeah, they were definitely getting ready to, and he starts having, like, oh no, like, the tongue starts coming out, and, like, he's like, oh, Freddy's coming, I gotta leave, and he runs away.
There's this other thing inside of him, and he must run. You know, it's funny because, like, I could see it now. Like, and there, you know, even if you had not told me anything, I would have been like, "There's some weird gay stuff going on in this." But as a kid, like, that shit was all flew right over my head. Never occurred to me. Never thought of it as the gay Nightmare on Elm Street or anything like that.
No, it's just the weird Nightmare on Elm Street. Like,
but it's just, you know, but people, like, I think that the director might not have known, but I think that the David Chaskin, who wrote it, was writing about a character who was, like, it was supposed to be subtext, I guess.
And closeted, yeah.
Some people would say it's not.
I mean, probably not.
Some people would say it's not subtext.
Pretty overt. It's,
yeah.
But the way it's presented, I guess, by people who weren't the ones intending it, didn't see it, I guess.
But yeah, this one, I think, one, you lose some of the really good score. I think you lose some of the, like, I think this one has a lot less of the atmosphere and mood. There's still something weird about it. And, like, I part of me that still likes parts of it, but
yeah,
it does feel like a cash-in sequel where, like, they didn't really care where the series went in some ways too. Like, so, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
So, like, I have this note here, like, from when I was, like, live tweeting it when I was watching it, it's like, I know it's going for something different, but I missed the dream reality transitions from the original. 20 minutes in and there's nothing nearly as creepy here. Like, it's just not as effective of a horror film in that way, because it's trying to do something completely different, and I don't think it always works.
Am I wrong in saying too that, like, one, there's nowhere near a scene as creepy as, like, with Tina, like, her kill scene. But it's like a low body count in this, right? Like, it's not. It's like the gym teacher guy. That's kind of it. And then, you know, stuff at the end. Then people, like, start, you know, shit goes, hits the fan for sure in the last 20 minutes. But
kills the gym teacher, kills his buddy.
Talking about his buddy in his bedroom near the end,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's, yeah, but, like, up until then, it was just basically the gym teacher, and that's a really kind of goofy kill. It's also, like, weird and confusing too, because it's like he basically kills him, but then he's, like, out at a bar, and, like, then he's wandering around naked in the streets, and doesn't know how he got there. It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, so there's a lot of like duality going on, like where he's almost like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And when he's Freddy, he's like, he doesn't remember.
So yeah, it's like, but there's something like, I think part of me is like, I just remember seeing this like really young on TV and stuff, and like being creeped out by some of the stuff near the end. Like even like the part when he first sees Freddy and Freddy's like, you know, you've got the body and I've got the brain or whatever. It's yeah. like he's starting to become that more jokey Freddy, but he's still kind of got an edge here for sure, I think.
Yeah.
I do think the part when like he finally takes over Jesse's body and kind of like emerges from Jesse's body is mm-hmm. really cool. Like cool, like, you know, makeup effects and shit where he just kind of like bursts out of Jesse. Like,
yeah, he's like, he like crawl, and it's not like an instant thing. Like he's like peeling away Jesse to get out. It's pretty awesome looking.
Yeah. Some like real cool effects with that shit. And then I think like, I remember like, to like when I was little, whenever they like advertise like, oh, you know, tomorrow night we're showing Nightmare on Elm Street 2, like the shot they would always show is Freddy at the pool party where he's like, you are all my children now, and he's kind of like waving his hands at them. Yeah. And shit. That whole part I think is kind of fun. Like it's goofy, like when he comes into the real world here.
It's so dumb.
Yeah, it's like, first of all, like, it's like this whole pool party. It's at Lisa's house, right? Like his yep. girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah, that whole thing is weird.
Yeah, like the parents are like hanging out with him. They're just like eating hot dogs and shit, and they got
playing like lounge music.
Yes, yes. And then, but then the parents are like, "All right, kids, we're going to bed." And like, as soon as the parents get inside, they like switch over to music to like 80s rock, and they like bust out like they have like fucking those little red wagons full of fucking beer yep. and ice and shit. It's just like the parents are literally right there. I mean, I guess I got away with sure a lot of the same shit, but like they're so loud about it. They're like, yeah, their parents are gone. Like they left. They didn't go anywhere. And the parents are like in their bedroom. They're in their bedroom going to sleep.
Yeah, it wasn't even like they left, right? Like because they go inside the house and like everything waits, and then they're like looking up at the bedroom, waiting for the lights to go out. As soon as the lights go out is like when they all go nuts. It's like,
and they hear it too. Like they yeah. show the parents hear it, and they're like, "Oh, what are those kids doing?" She's like, "Just let them have fun, or whatever." I'm like, all right. And then, but yeah, then Freddy shows up and just kind of causes havoc. Like makes the beer cans explode and the hot dogs explode and shit. It's like, what the fuck is going on here? I don't know. I kind of have fun with that part, even though it's like goofy as shit. The ending is like really weird too. It's like another like they weren't sure how to end it. I don't know. Like they like go to this factory or whatever.
Yeah. So like I don't necessarily love that scene, although there's like some, you know, creepy ghoul dogs or whatever. And,
yes. Oh my god, dude. There's like these dogs that look like they put just like rubber masks on their face. Yeah. They look like real dogs that are wearing like weird, creepy human masks.
But I love the lighting. Like they go back to Freddy's boiler room. Mm-hmm. It's just like a real thing. But the lighting is like red and green. It's like it kind of makes the building Freddy. Like,
yeah,
it's like he embodies this space. And you know, what's her name? Lisa? Is that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
She has to kind of like coax Jesse back from the edge. As being Freddy, like, no, you can beat him. He's not you. Which is funny because it's like, he's just murdered a bunch of people. Like he's a crazy dude. And then the real ending just makes zero sense because of that.
Yeah. So, but like, again, it's one of those weird, like how you defeat something that's supernatural. You just come up with some bullshit. And so here the bullshit is, she just tells him to fight Freddy, like, you know, like fight for control of your body over Freddy. And then I think she like kisses him and says, I love you or something. And then yeah. that works. It's just like magic bullshit. You know what I mean? It's like, yep. well, we had to come up with some way for them to beat this thing that is unbeatable because he's not real.
We found a way for you to bend. And like, I view Freddy as like a stand in for mental illness here. like she's like, oh, well, love is enough to overcome. You're she's crazy.
She's killing his gayness. If you want to take,
the, yeah, if you really want to go on that side of it. The fuck is this movie?
But it's weird. You kind of like gloops off of, like, he just kind of like fall, like basically, yeah, like the Freddy shit falls off him, and underneath there's Jesse, and you know, they've defeated him, I guess. It's weird. It's just a weird, like, you know, you want like this big, like, climatic showdown, and you don't get it either. Like, you kind of get it in the first one, and then they backtrack on that to, and then she just tells him that he's a dream, and he dies. You
really don't get it here.
And you really don't get it here. Like, and it feels like it's building this like showdown in this. But you can't have a showdown. He's controlled his body, so like they did the only thing you could do, which is just like fight him. And I love you, and that, like, somehow makes Freddy go away. And then you have another tacked on scene at the very end, you know, just like the first one. And this is like he's riding on the bus to school, kind of like the movie opens with a dream with him like riding on a bus to school. And it's weird because, like, I guess this is a dream too, right? But it's all like, man, that was one crazy, you know, night or whatever. Like, dude, you fucking murdered your friend, you know, like he killed his fucking buddy. And they're all just kind of like, well, I'm glad that's over. It's like, aren't you guys like traumatized? Like, how is this dude not in jail and shit? Like, what the fuck is going on here? And then the bus keeps driving off, and Freddy's driving the bus, and that's the end of the movie, basically. I don't know. What do you think of this one?
Look, I like what it, like, conceptually, I think it's a pretty cool idea, like, that there's this monster embodiment of somebody's parallel psyche, like, as they're having a mental break. Like, that's pretty cool. Like, you're seeing that personification in this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type thing. But I think, like, execution-wise, this is not a very good movie. Like, it's cool. There are cool things about it. There's some cool scenery and cool scenes, but it's mostly just not very good.
Yeah, there's something about me, like, I can never, like, entirely write this one off just because I think, like, I kind of dug it as a kid. And, like, I'm not... Like you're like, it's an interesting concept. Like, I'm not opposed to the concept either. I'm okay with them trying to do something different in this part two or whatever. And I don't think it's a terrible idea that, oh, Freddy's trying to take over a person's body to get into the real world. That's an interesting idea. I just, you know, like, kind of one thing I touched on earlier, it's like, there's no body count in this. Like, there's nothing, there's not enough kills for sure. You know, you come to a slasher, you expect some kills, and there's just not much here.
Yeah, and normally, like, the movies, like, you know, their body count increases.
Yeah,
like, it's this decrease. Like,
less. And, like, you know, it's not just, the problem is not just that there's less kills in this, it's just there's less atmosphere, there's less mood. You know, that's one thing, like, I think the first one really nails, and it's just kind of, like, sucked out of this one, like... And you're just kind of left with, like, this kid, you know, dealing with something, trying to take over his body, and this, like, gay subtext thing, which I think that's interesting, too. That's, like, one of the things that makes this fun, that, like, it's just remembered, like, for that, you know, like,
yeah,
being the most overtly gay subtext ever in a movie. Yeah, and like I said, there's things I like about it. It just... They, like, I kind of agree with you completely. They just don't nail the execution of anything here. It's just kind of feels more like a generic movie, like a generic slasher in a way, in some ways, but like without all the cool kills and shit. Like, you know, it's mostly about the plot of him figuring out what's happening to him. You know what I mean? And you know what's going on. Like, you get it right away. And it's just like, all right, let's go. Like,
I want some more cool shit to happen. Yeah, I think if this movie was called, like, you take out Nightmare on Elm Street and you replace Freddy with
something else,
we're not talking about this movie, right? Because it's not part of this, like, historic series in horror. It's just an 80s horror film that had a cool concept and was pretty gay.
But yeah, but would not have been good enough to be remembered in a way.
Right.
It's just like, I don't know, when I think of the series as a whole, I've never really hated this one, and I do think that this one is better than some of the others.
For sure, I think.
You agree on that, too? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I just think, you know, I think the concept is enough to pull it through. I don't like it. I don't think it's a particularly well-made movie, but the conceptually, against some of those later films, this is cooler.
Yeah, for sure, I remember hating some of the later ones, but again, this thing is not great. It's kind of a misfire. But I guess I just remembered, like, the one thing I had said when I was watching it is, like, this kind of also feels like it's something from another dimension or something. It's like, you know, what if there's a dimension very similar to ours where Nightmare on Elm Street, like, the rules of Nightmare on Elm Street are a little different? Like, it's just, like, this weird one that, like, despite the fact that it doesn't work, I've seen it a bunch and I'll probably see it many more times. But yeah. It just, you know, if I'm falling on a verdict here, they kind of, they don't nail it here. They don't, and it does have a, like, that weak ending. Like, everything after the pool party is pretty weak, I think, except for the demon dogs. But just the whole, like, there's not, like, this interesting showdown at the end because you couldn't have one. And then you have another one of these tacked on scenes at the end that, you know, those are all are other things that bring it down more. It's not great, but I don't hate it. What do you follow? Like, what's your rating on this?
I'm going to give it a 2. But yeah, I don't hate it. I've seen it a bunch as well, and I probably will see it a few more times, you know, in the future. Yeah. And it's at least trying something. Like, where maybe some of these other ones aren't.
Are not, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I fall a 2 on it as well, but it's one of the, like, my higher 2s. Like, it's very often if I say a movie is a 2, I really dislike it. And this is, like, I don't dislike it. It just doesn't quite work. And, you know, it doesn't work enough for me to give it a 3. So it's a 2, but I don't hate it, as I've stated many times already. So yeah, we will have next week. We'll have part 3 and 4, which I'm real excited to get to. This is kind of the, in many ways, the peak of the series. And we'll have. I'm going to see it. I'm not scared. I'm going to have Joker.
I should have Joker as well. Should. Did do we want to touch on?
Yeah.
Creepshow.
Yep. So you got a chance to check out the new Shudder Creepshow series.
Yes, I watched the first episode, which you had watched too. Is it there's a second episode out now? Or?
Yeah, it's out. I watched that right before we recorded.
Okay.
So, yeah, each episode is like, I think the episodes are like around 45 minutes, and each episode will have like 2 stories. So you said you saw the first one.
Yep.
What did you think of the first episode of Creepshow?
I liked it. I like that something like this exists.
Exactly.
It's like, it's cool coming in and seeing, like, you know, getting a, you know, 15, 20 minute horror story. It's the problem is, I think, is like, it's going to depend on the quality of the stories. And their execution. Like, I think, like, there are things I like about both. And there are things like I didn't like about both in that first one, which was like, what, Gray Matter and the House of the Head or something like that. Or, I don't know. Like, there are things about both I liked, and it's a cool concept. I hope that I like other stories more.
I just think a lot of times with these anthologies, like, you know, I've been watching some other stuff too outside of the series that are like, you know, I watched the original movie. I just watched one called Body Bags today, which is like kind of the same thing, like another anthology. I just think in most anthologies, most of the short stories are just not very great. Like, I loved the shit, especially when I was a kid. Like, I guess it wouldn't matter to me as much, but like, it's just hard to do a lot in a short story.
Right.
And so, like, I have a weird thing about these anthology things where I think, like, most of the short stories are not great, but I love the whole package. And I think that's kind of how I feel about the TV series. It's like, yeah, I don't think any of the shorts have blown me away, But it's just the idea that we have a TV show, one, that's doing shorts like this. And you have, like, kind of like the Creepshow ghoul thing as, like, the Crypt Keeper here. You have, like, that comic book aesthetic that they're doing, like, you know, sometimes at the beginning.
I do like that, yeah.
Sometimes in the middle of a story, it'll just show you a couple comic panels, you know, to advance the story a little bit.
Yep.
They do that in a very cheap way in the second episode. So there's the second episode, one of the short stories has werewolves. And right when, like, all these people, like, it's like a group of guys, like a group of soldiers are about to transform into werewolves, they do the transformation, like, they cut to, like, comic book panels and just show them transform. I'm like, come on, dude, like, you're doing a werewolf thing. I want to see the werewolf transformation. I don't want to see a comic book of it. I mean, I'm guessing budget is an issue here.
But right.
I do dig, like, how they're doing that, like, the whole aesthetic. Like, it looks and sounds like this would be Creepshow, like, you know, the old movies. Yeah, I think that you liked the Grey Matter story more, and I kind of dug the... I thought the House of the Head, which is, like, this little girl, she has, like, a dollhouse, and there's, like, an evil head inside of it. And it's just, like, some of this, like, she'll leave, and she'll come back to the dollhouse, and, like, the people inside the dollhouse have moved around into, like, these... I just thought it was creepy, like, the way she'd find the people in the dollhouse and then these really, like, scary positions. Like, just something creepy happening, you know?
Ooh.
Reverb there. Reverb there.
Oh, boy. But yeah.
No, maybe not. Yeah, so... Yeah, I think there were good things out of the House of the Head. Yeah. I kind of like the Lovecraft thing going on with Grey Matter though, and like how this thing is, you know, going to overtake the entire population. And,
yes,
it's cool. Like, I think they're both cool in their own sense, but I also think like they're so bare bones.
Yeah,
House of the Head probably has a little bit more going for it, like in terms of story. Like,
it doesn't really build anything at the end, though. They just like give the dollhouse
away. Oh, it's just like where you give it away, and like it doesn't necessarily mean anything's gonna happen in the real world. So,
yeah, and then that first one, you know, he had such an awesome cast, and I just wish like, yeah, Tobin Bell and Giancarlo Esposito as these two cops, like they're both awesome actors. They're just not giving much to do, you know. It's like you land these awesome actors, and I get it's just like a day or two of work for them. But I just wish there was like something more for them to do, you know.
Yeah,
I did enjoy. So one of the stories in the second episode stars DJ Qualls, and I enjoyed him as like this fucking asshole in it. His story is called The Finger, and it's like he's like this just kind of like loser who like. He likes collecting things he finds, and he finds a finger, and he keeps it. And like the finger grows into like a monster that will go out and kill people he doesn't like. it's a fun little like they're all goofy, and there's not much to any of the stories. But again, it's just for me, it's just like the whole kind of package, and it's like fun to see like stupid short horror stories around Halloween season. You know?
Yeah, they're fun.
I'm glad
it exists.
Yeah, I'm digging it so far. I don't think I've been blown away by any of the short stories yet. But we'll see. Maybe there'll be some like really standout ones in there. We got, I think, 6 episodes total, so there'll be, you know, 12 short stories altogether.
Yeah.
We'll see. Again, like you, I'm happy to exist and gladly take it with my Shudder subscription. So
yeah, it's well worth it.
Anyways, we will be back next week.
Movie dudes.